I'm going to address that comment, the last one.
It's so beautiful to see people still down there coming up here, fighting their way through the crowd like sardines. It's a gorgeous crowd, I would say. I am just so overwhelmed with the turnout. It's the energy here is amazing. And continuing to stand here. You're all so beautiful.
It's awesome to see everybody here. It's a beautiful crowd. My name is Teddy Shababa. I'm an organizer with Socialist Alternative, a nationwide organization of social, economic, racial justice activists, fighters against sexism. And we also, I bring you greetings from the march yesterday. It was Resist Trump, Occupy Inauguration. It was a fantastic march. We are absolutely right to serve notice on the Trump administration that from the first day, we will not accept and we will resist Trumpism. We will resist attacks on women's rights. We will fight for full access to reproductive health care. We will fight to dismantle rape culture, which has been installed in the presidency right now. We will fight racism, sexism, ableism, homophobia, transphobia, and the class war of the rich against the poor. And make no mistake about it, Trumpism can be defeated. Donald Trump has no mandate. He lost the popular vote by almost 3 million, and the overwhelming march of public opinion has been towards justice and freedom for all. Ordinary people's movements have defeated right-wing monsters, dictators, slavery, total lack of suffrage, and more, and we can defeat Trump's agenda. But the question is, what kind of unity do we need? Everyone will say, yes, we need a united mass fight back and resistance against Trump's agenda. That's pretty obvious, and we're here to show that. And it has to be a sustained mass resistance. It cannot be we come out here in mass numbers one day and then we go back. Are y'all going to be out here to resist whatever it takes? So we say that we must make, not only must we reject Trump's agenda, we must make demands that are based on what people actually need, not on what is acceptable to the corporate-controlled politicians of the two major parties. We need a united mass resistance made up of the great mass of ordinary people, workers, students, women, people of color, immigrants, LGBTQ folks. We have no need to be united with the leaders of the Democratic Party, which I must say, their politicians are making nice with Donald Trump, saying, let's give Trump a chance. Do you agree with that? Shamefully, many of them are attending his inauguration as dignitaries rather than joining the resistance that is outside. And after the devastating loss in the elections, rather than having a public accounting for why they lost against the most beatable candidate in historical memory, they want to blame everything on the Russians. We need a powerful mass political alternative to the two corporate parties and build on our own strength. I want to invite you to a great public forum we're going to have today. These are the types of questions we're going to discuss. What kinds of strategies do we need to win? We're going to have a mass meeting to discuss strategies forward at the Central Library at 3:30 in room 302. Defeating Trumpism, what next for the resistance? Thank you.
Not our president. Not our president. Hey. Hello. Hello. My name's Tom, and I was one of the organizers of this, so thank you for all coming. I really appreciate it. One of the things I thought when I see all these people on stage and all you guys in the audience is that one word that describes all of you guys is community organizers. And you may know we have a currently unemployed former community organizer. So if any of you need help from him, I think he's free. But one of the things I think is that all of you guys and everyone you see on stage, you could follow that path in any direction you want, from community organizer to any level of participating in your community and making life better for all of us. One person who's working hard to communicate to organize in our community is Maurice Cheeks, an alder here in Madison. He is just coming off of an organizing event called Leading Locally that started before us this morning. And he's incredibly helpful to us, to all of you. When I had a problem a few weeks ago, I contacted him on Facebook and I was like, oh, Alder, can you help me? And he called me 10 seconds after I sent him my phone number and said, what can we do to solve this problem? That's what we need in our world now, are people who say there's problems, there's solutions, and we're going to find a way to fix those. And Maurice Cheeks is one of those people that I believe in. And so he's going to come tell you some things that you can do to make the world better.
It's a beautiful day in Madison, right? So as Tom mentioned, just before I came here, we had a few hundred people a couple blocks away talking about the importance of local leadership. What we did was we spent the morning devising our plan as a community, as individuals, for a 100-day agenda for how we will be determined as a community to drive our city forward regardless of any election, regardless of who the president is or who the governor is. It's folks like you who are going to ensure that our community has what it takes to move forward. And I thank you guys so much for being here. The president said earlier last week that the solution for despair is to get up and do something. And you guys are here doing something. This is exactly, as was said earlier, this is exactly what the resistance looks like. I feel a tremendous debt of gratitude to all of the women who worked really hard over the past couple months, who stepped into gear as soon as the election took place and said, we will not stand by. We will not act like this is okay. This will not be normalized. The President of the United States is an embarrassment. And we will stand together and remind each other that our city doesn't believe in that and our country doesn't believe in that, and that will never be okay. I want you guys to know that in 2008, President Obama, when he was elected, I stood taller than I've ever stood. I thought to myself, this is something that I can be excited about. And listen, we all felt that way, and we will all continue to feel proud of that legacy that we contributed to. But I want you to know that you can stand just as tall today, because we come together and say, you know what? This is still my country. This is still my state. This is still my city, and we're not going anywhere. I love you guys.
Oh, my God. Ophelia Bai, and I am awestruck at your representation. Thank you, State of Wisconsin. So, as some of you may know, I answered a plea for help on a Facebook post this past November. A woman named Chelsea wanted to organize a local action on the 21st of January. I figured that since I couldn't afford to go to D.C., I'd stay local and try to get involved here in Wisconsin. And I thought, you know, perhaps a few hundred of us would gather at the Capitol, and look at us now! It is my sincere honor to introduce our next speaker. I got to know her last year when my child entered her classroom. The woman about to speak to you reached my child in a way that no other teacher had ever managed before or since. Her positive impact on my child's life was incredible to witness. I am forever thankful that teachers, like our next speaker, are in our public school system. Our next speaker is an ally, an activist, an educator, and an inspiration. Please give it up for Abigail Swetz.
My name is Abigail Swetz, and I am a proud public school teacher. I know there is a lot that is wrong with the American education system, but none of it is the students. The students are amazing. They are kind. They are passionate. They are committed to social justice. They are going to change the world one day. And someday we will all look back and realize that one day was actually November 9th, 2016. See, I love teaching in an election year. As a U.S. history teacher, my ultimate goal is to create active citizens out of my students. And in this country, that means I want them to grow up to be informed voters. So, we start young. I know I did. I was raised to know that voting is a civic duty of democracy, and I work to impart that sense of duty to my students. This year, above all, they got it. Let me tell you how I know that. I do love teaching in an election year, but this year made me nervous. I teach young women, I teach queer students, I teach students of color, I teach Muslim students, I teach the diverse future of this great country. Teachers, we're expected to remain politically neutral in the classroom, and I struggled with that idea when presented with these two candidates and the threat to the emotional safety of my students one of them posed. There is nothing more important to me than to keep my students safe, to provide a safe space for them to be who they really are, to explore what that means, and to examine their own and each other's beliefs. This doesn't mean discussions don't get contentious sometimes, but those conversations happen in an environment where students feel safe to express their opinions and even change their minds. That is why we created an election social contract as a class, a set of rules we would follow when discussing the election. It was a collaborative effort, and this is what they came up with. 7 rules to live by in our classroom. 1, be curious and open-minded. 2, speak your mind truthfully. 3, think critically and explain your opinions with facts and reasoning. 4, listen to each other. 5, respect each other. Disagree with each other's ideas, not with each other as people. 6, be kind. 7, get involved. Decisions are made by those who show up. And so we started studying the election. We examined the issues by diving into the party platforms. We investigated the policy differences between the parties. The discussions were emotional and passionate, but also curious and open-minded and respectful, all in keeping with our social contract. I did my best to ask questions without inserting my opinions, but the day came when we had to move from policies to people and take a look at the candidates, not just the parties. I was about to bring Donald Trump into this safe space. And so I made a decision. I decided to follow my conscience as an active and informed citizen and my duty as a teacher entrusted with her students' safety. I decided to not remain neutral. I told my students I respected people's right to hold opinions different than my own. I told my students I respected many politicians from both sides of the aisle and that their ideas deserved our curiosity, our open minds, and our healthy debate. And I followed our social contract and spoke my truth. I told them I was their teacher and my number one job was to keep them safe. And I told them that in all the anti-bullying training I had ever been taught, the most important lesson was to never be a bystander to bullying. And so I refused to be one. I told my students that Donald Trump's behavior during this campaign was wrong, that it was bullying behavior, and it would not be tolerated in my classroom. And I encouraged them to start looking at the election itself through the lens of our classroom social contract, and so they did. And then November 8th came, and then November 9th, and I didn't know how to keep them safe anymore. I didn't know how to teach this. So I turned class over to my students. We talked. They felt bewildered. They felt sad and lost. They felt more than a little betrayed. And then something really special happened. We cried together. I had agonized over what to do all day, all night, all morning. I had written in my lesson plan book, Process the Election, but I wasn't sure how to do that in the face of their raw emotion. As we talked and as students cried together, I started crafting a writing activity. I told them a wise president once said, "We must find time to stop and thank the people who make a difference in our lives." I told them President John F. Kennedy would want them to reach out and thank people. I told them that a lot of people were going to be hurting today. I told them it was a good day to think about expressing kindness, to think about gratitude. Who are you thankful for today? Who in your life could use a word of kindness? I told them, write them a letter telling them why you are grateful for them and thanking them for being in your life. And this is when the magic truly happened. You could have heard a pin drop. I asked them to be kind, to reach out, and they were, and they did. They wrote to their parents, to neighbors, to teachers, to friends, to mentors in the community, to family. But most touching of all, they wrote to each other. They reached out to classmates they saw hurting, classmates having an especially hard time, and they said, "I'm here for you." And they were. The next 4 years are going to be tough, and we are going to have to make them full of speaking out and standing up and very strong activism. But first, we will have to make them full of kindness. That is how I am going to be an active citizen. I will speak out, I will stand up, and I will be kind. So, let's all take inspiration from some of the wisest people I know, the 13 and 14-year-olds in my classroom, and reach out to someone in kindness. Let's start today. Let's start now. There is so much still to be done, and we are the ones to do it.
If you guys could expand the crowd to the sides a little bit, in any way. It would make room for there's still people you can see from here coming up State Street. They have no room to go because it's blocked back there. So if you guys could kind of try, anyone who could kind of try and find space in the sides would be super awesome. Thank you. And this is Lydia, who's also awesome.
Hello, Wisconsin. My name is Lydia, and I am a proud public school student. I am here to introduce our youth poets. Ella is a sophomore, she is a dancer, and has competed in Brave New Voices, the International Youth Poetry Slam. Mayingen is a freshman. She is a member of the Ojibwe and Ho-Chunk tribes and competed in the Wisconsin State Slam Finals as an eighth grader last year. Blue is a junior at Shabazz City High School. They identify as non-binary trans masculine, and they are a member of the Art Right Collective. We are the next generation of poets, of activists, and of voters. We are so excited to be here to add our voices to this amazing rally.
Hi, I'm Ella. I'm gonna read a poem for you guys. I am a feminist. I am a my body, my choice feminist. I am an intersectional feminist. I am a $30 t-shirt telling everyone I'm a feminist feminist. And yet, I wonder if my name would be pretty on a bathroom wall. I wonder just how many boys have wanted to see this body up close, to feel all of this cotton candy sweet woman. Am I not a woman if men do not want to touch me? Am I not a woman if men do not look at me like cotton candy, all light and sweet, ready to melt in their mouths, dissolve into nothing? Am I still a woman if I write this poem in statements, not questions? I preach the gospel that women have supernatural powers, that girls can fly, and yet I sit and I wait for these hollow-boned wings to be filled with whatever someone else wants to put there. I tell myself that I am a goddess, as beautiful as Aphrodite, as strong as Athena, fuck Cupid's arrow, I'll hunt with Artemis. But when I look in the mirror, I see bread at communion, just holy enough to bless them with the consumption of me, you. You lifetime of media stuck in my esophagus. You gender roles bunched up in my stomach. You patriarchy glued to my back, how dare you? How dare you make me hide under sweatshirts? How dare you make me associate masculinity with power and waistline with worth? How dare you slit my wrists, then tell me that my blood is your fine wine? How dare you tell me not to reduce myself to crumbs when you break me with every meal? How dare you make me feel less woman, more mistake? Less girl, more exception, less human, more object. You told me that I am a flower, pretty enough to be looked at, outspoken enough to have thorns in all of the right places, silent enough to be still. You told me that I am a flower, and I'm starting to believe you. You see, I'm roots deep in internalized misogyny. I'm roots deep, and it smells a lot like bullshit.
Anin, Mayingen, indigenous cause. My name is Mayingen, Chashu Chingahingaide. I didn't cry for the Pulse until 12 days after it had happened. Didn't read articles or Facebook posts, ignored tributes to those who had passed and lists of living family members. Maintained ignorance to maintain bliss, traded tears for the ability to focus on my summer essay. 12 days after my finger accidentally clicked on a video of names of people who had died that night. There was no sad music or pictures of their crying family, but the weight that each name held was enough to be the bow laying on the strings of a violin playing the saddest song I've ever heard. On June 12th, 50 people's lives ended. 50 morning routines gone, 50 beds unoccupied, 50, 50, 50. On November 9th, when passing in the halls of my school, I heard a girl remark that every day was the Pulse now that Trump was our president. I will not cry for Donald Trump. I will cry for the Pulse and every incident similar, whether it happens during this presidency or the next, but I will not cry for Donald Trump. This presidency won't end my life or anyone else's. I will not cry for Donald Trump. He doesn't deserve these tears. These beads of salt water are far more than he deserves, but that's besides the point. I will not cry for Donald Trump, and neither should you.
Hi, I'm Blue. There are some events that split time into the before and the after. It is 6 months before. I am in my school's gender-neutral bathroom, which is often vandalized. It is the only place I feel was meant for me. A boy takes a semi-nude photo of me without my knowledge or consent. The school handles the situation quickly and with authority. I still do not feel safe. I cannot imagine what I would feel if he had been put in a position of power rather than reprimanded. It is 1 month before. The now president issues a non-apology for bragging about sexually assaulting women. I am not surprised. I have been taught since birth that my body is not my own. This is simply another reminder. I take comfort in the fact that we will soon have a woman president. It is 2 days before. I am sitting in my doctor's office. My father is outside talking to the insurance company. He tells the nurse to just give me the shot. We can pay out of pocket today if we need to. It is the first time I am excited to be given an injection. The syringe does not contain medicine, but magic. It will start me on the journey to becoming physically masculine. Lucky for me, the insurance will cover the testosterone and I can continue to take it. It is the night of. I sit on the floor of a briar patch group room, surrounded by several other queer teens, both terrified and confident. Surely we will win, we will be okay. The former is proven wrong, the latter questionable. It is the morning after. I check my Facebook feed and see the results. I do not look at my phone again until lunch. I walk into school not quite knowing what to expect. The student center, usually humming with activity, is eerily quiet. I sink into a couch, into the arms of my best friend. It is all too easy to lose each other now, so we hold on tight. We fall apart, but we do it together, and somehow that makes it a little more okay. Our teachers wear black. We don't do schoolwork today. We talk. We look to each other for answers, only to find more questions. Some of us cry. Some cannot cry yet. I have not cried yet. It is 1 week after. I am back at Briar Patch with my queer siblings. We are angry. We lament the fact that we cannot vote yet. We are not allowed to own our government yet. We mourn the fact that some of us may not survive the next 4 years. We are deeply, deeply afraid. It is 1 month after. I am lying awake at 4 a.m., shivering under my blankets in a cold sweat, having woken up from yet another nightmare. My dog covers me in kisses, trying to make the fear go away. I will need her now more than ever. It is 1 month and 3 weeks after. The Wisconsin Insurance Board decides that transitioning is not medically necessary. I think about my life before beginning my transition. I do not want that life. It is 2 months and 3 days after. I am painting with a group of incredible artists and activists. One of my mentors tells us that she is stockpiling emergency contraceptives for anyone who might need it in anticipation of the Affordable Care Act being repealed, as well as other legislation preventing female-bodied people from accessing medical treatment and making decisions about their own bodies. I think about how I may only have a few weeks left to legally change my name. There is so much confusion and fear as to what he might do. I feel as if we are preparing for a human rights apocalypse. I have a panic attack for the first time in almost 4 months. That night, I fall into a restless non-sleep, too exhausted to stay awake, too scared to stay asleep. It is 2 months and 2 weeks after. Until now, I have not attended any rallies or protests. I have not felt strong enough. I have felt too powerless, too overwhelmed by the reality we are living in. I have not been ready to fight. I am now. I have to. I have no other choice. I have no other choice. I have to stand up for my rights because no one else will. I cannot do much. I do not understand legal language. I cannot vote, but I can be here. I can make my voice heard, and so I will, until I cannot anymore, and then I will rest. I will take comfort in the presence of my allies. I will draw strength from the courage of others, and I will rise again. We will rise again, we must. There is no other choice. There are some events that split time into the before and the after. Today is day one of the after, and the after is ours.